Accession number 10167, rule 13.
Mr. Ronald Elliott, reel 13. Were there any other activities of note while you were in Vienna with the 16th?
Well, it wasn't all enjoyment. Ceremonial duties that were undertaken by various companies. And this involved a lot of hard work to them because they had to polish everything. It was spit and polish of a high order there because you were right in the front of people's notice and representing the English or well, the British military position. So they whilst they were on, they weren't on all the time, but whilst they were on guard duties, some of them were working very hard. But what we were doing were just sort of administrative jobs, at the same time taking advantage of all the facilities, as indeed they were, I think. Most people enjoyed it primarily whilst they were there.
Were you looking forward to being demobbed yourself, or how did you feel about that?
Oh, yeah, I think one wanted to. There was always the fear of losing friends that one had because they had been forged over many years in difficult situations. I had a number of friends in the signals. But at this time, and after Vienna, we came back to Wilden in the cold and the snow. And that was quite a miserable period of time for a few weeks. And what was happening then on a sort of a regular basis were that gradually the older, more senior members were leaving to be demobbed. So you were saying goodbye to people quite regularly, and one by one you would be losing friends anyhow. So you saw them going, and you were sensing that the position was changing, whatever. At this point in time, by the end of November, I did get my leave in England. It had been, I think, available for a year or two, but there again it had also been worked out on the basis of how many years service you had, both overseas and in the army. I remember one time when we were feeling disgruntled, all of us signals, I think it was in Patras, we devised a scheme whereby you had a leave scheme that depended on how many years service you had in the front line, and all of us who were in the signals came out quite well on that. That's not how it worked. But anyway, it came to my turn in the normal course of events at the end of November 1945. So I did have a month in England at the end of November 45. So I really didn't see much of what happened in Wilden.
How did you find England when you got... Because that was after the election, and
Yes.
They had a Labour government in, and I think you had been a sympathiser, or the battalion had been.
Yes. Well, I think most people at home were, the family certainly were Labour. Everyone is looking forward. It was a feeling of anticipation that there would be lots of changes. Life would be totally different. There was a feeling of hope that people had, that one had come through the war unscathed or whatever, that you were still alive, thank God, that... with the Labour government, things would change politically, and that it would be a better life for everyone, and a fairer life, more equitable, and that eventually there would be a better economic climate. But of course, things were quite tough for some years, and there were still shortages. But primarily, I think it was a feeling of hope and anticipation that things would be better in the future.
And you picked this atmosphere up on your leave?
Yes, yes. Of course, you didn't have so much worries about jobs because they had this scheme whereby you were promised your own job back, sort of thing. I mean, how that all worked out in the event is now difficult to appreciate, but there had been this understanding that everyone had to go back to their jobs and their jobs were kept open for them. And this was a rule that the employers had to agree to. But of course it became very difficult for them to implement, generally speaking. And there was this fear that I felt when I went back on that occasion. I remember that, there was a job promised for me, but there were so many people coming back with longer service than I who were already back, and they were clearly going to get the plum jobs. So I wasn't terribly sure about what my prospects would be, or about indeed whether I wanted to go back at that time necessarily. But I had all the excitement knocked out of me. I wasn't of a mind to go in for anything terribly unusual. I'd been quite happy to go back to something nice and peaceful and quiet, I thought. But although, as I say, we were fairly sure there was going to be a job, no one was quite certain what that job might be, although you went back to your own employer. The next part of it is fairly rushed, that almost immediately after we returned from this leave, I went with Les Brown, and he got married on that leave, I remember. The 16th Battalion itself was disbanded.
That was in January?
January the 4th, 1946. It was, of course, a territorial battalion anyway, and as such would naturally have been disbanded after the wartime situation ended. But of course, we all had very great feeling for the old battalion and were very sorry that it should go, particularly as there was still the fear that, it might be sent somewhere else. But what happened was that it didn't turn out quite so difficult from our point of view, in that we were told we were going to the 1st ELI, which we weren't very happy about going to the 1st ELI per se, but it was in Greece, so we thought, it's quite pleasant, it could be many worse places to go to. And they were in an occupying operation in Greece, and in Salonika, as it happened. So,
were you back to Signaler when you were posted there, or...?
Yes, I'd gone back to Signals, I think, in that time, because I finished up with the Signals. So somehow or other, yes, I'd gone back to Signals. It was the SS Carthage, I got a note of, that we embarked, I don't know from where, Bari or somewhere like that in Italy, I would guess. Anyway, we went to Salonika, and then travelled by road from Salonika up to a place called Xanthi, which is right on the Greek-Turkish border in Thrace, I think it is now. It was right. It was again was just an occupying operation, but I think in that area to keep down any problems with the local population with the Turks, in case there was any difficulty there. And the Bulgarians were north of there, so it was pretty well a territorial area. But it was never any problem. That was all the time we were there was purely an occupational operation.
What differences did you notice between the 16th territorial type battalion and the regular 1st?
One aspect which was most noticeable was that the old regular sergeants and sergeant majors in particular seemed to reappear from somewhere. Now, your pre-war regulars were as thick as planks, because in those days, I guess, only the very poorest types of mentality went into the army and rose to be sergeants in the true pre-war military type of situation. And I saw a lot of them later on with the first. And they were rough and ready and quite ignorant type of person. And
how did they show their ignorance? Do you mean...
Well, to start with, I think... Anyway, where had they been during the war? Obviously, they'd got themselves out of any sort of dangerous situations into, I guess, transit camps in these sort of places, doing administrative roles as sergeant majors in charge of things. And, as I say, it was quite remarkable how they all seemed to reappear. Because later on, we got to be sergeants and finished up in the sergeant's mess. So we'll tell you about that in a moment. But where it began was that I was a corporal by this time, somehow or other, in the signals. And my old friend was also there, the old signal officer, Perriam. So I was back with someone who was technically my enemy, somebody who wasn't very happy with me. And it was not again a situation that I was terribly pleased about. We were back almost then to a full peacetime, wartime role, a full peacetime military role, shall I say. All of the longer service people had left by that time to be demobbed. Their places were taken up by conscript young people. And of course, the army was reasserting its discipline over these people, so that bullshit was rife. And we were back to almost what it was like, I think, when I first joined the army, that the army was reasserting its position by making sure that everyone understood who was boss, and everyone was kept down in their true position by the might of traditions and obeying the rules and regulations of the peacetime army. So I wasn't very happy. As a corporal, I had to do supervisory signalling duties, which I wasn't terribly happy about. So, again, I was looking for a way out, as it happened. And
what about the... Sorry to interrupt. Did you also have the pre-war officers? I don't suppose they'd be there, would they?
There were a few of the younger officers like us who were due to be mobbed. And there were one or two... Oh, the regular officers were still there. But I think we still had mostly the younger officers waiting to be demobbed, as far as I remember.
So, in a sense, it was you had the sort of fighting officer you'd had with the 16th as officers, but beneath them you had a layer of senior NCOs who had reappeared and were asserting the values of what you consider the regular pre-war army.
Yeah, yes. And, of course, there were some regular officers who, of course, were coming back and doing much the same. So what they were trying to do, I guess, and I don't know whether it was working, I guess it wouldn't have worked to the same standard as it used to do. They were trying to re-establish the old peacetime traditions. Neither the old soldiers, nor I suspect the young conscripts, would stand for it much anymore. It wasn't a quiescent sort of population like it used to be in the old days. But they were trying to do it, so there was a fair bit of stress. Anyway, again there was an advert on battalion orders for people to apply as education lecturers in the education department. So I thought, I'll try that, sounds quite good. And the beauty about the education department was that it wasn't, we were in a, more or less a barracks, north of the town, and completely separate from the town itself. The education department, somewhat happily, was down in a house in the town. Somebody had the bright idea that it ought to be well away from the rest of the military establishment so that education could go on in a very rarefied atmosphere. And that was a terribly good idea. I don't know whose idea it was, but jolly good. And we shared it with the intelligence department. Quite what intelligence they got up to, I never did find out. And we had a library down there as well. But it was like a civilian setup completely. And that was a little enclave of its own, of people, once we all got together, and I got to know them and became very friendly with them all. We were all then people who had been in the wartime DLI and were waiting to be demobbed technically, and who reckoned that they'd done their bit and now was the time to have a nice, peaceful, quiet life. So we were completely separate from any bullshit. I mean, we just used to operate on our own. I don't even know that we had an officer as such.
How many of you were there?
In the beginning, when I first joined, I was made up to a sergeant, by the way. That was an incredible thing. But it was an acting sergeant. It wasn't a war substantive sergeant. It was an acting sergeant, but it was paid. So that wasn't a bad. There were three others, excluding myself, so there were four of us. And we had an orderly and we had a librarian, so about six of us. But as I say, we all worked together as a team, and it wasn't a military type operation at all. And what we were doing, which I took to it, and I found I had quite a flair eventually for lecturing. The object of the exercise at that point in time was that we'd taken these conscripts in, and we come to the conclusion, rightly, that they were a pretty thick lot, in the sense that their education, of course, during the war, hadn't been particularly good. And so we should do something about improving them. So part of the operation later on was to do something about conscripts. But in the beginning, when we first went there, to sort of start at the beginning, what we were doing was operating rehabilitation courses for people to be demobbed. And that's where it started. If I get it right, the conscript business came later. We started off, yes. The object of the exercise in the first stage was that all people who had to be demobbed were given lectures in things like what sort of life it would be back home, tax position, insurance position, and advice about jobs and what people might care to do. And we tried to give job information, job career advice and this sort of thing. So we were, in a sort of a very generalized way, trying to prepare people for civilian life. And we did this to those who were about to be demobbed for some time.
Now, the Army Bureau of Current Affairs had quite a reputation for this, being a
yes.
socialist orientated
yeah.
at that time.
They provided a lot, and it probably was, but I mean, it was in keeping with the attitude of the people who were in receipt of the information. I don't think if they were socialists, and I'm not conscious that they were especially so, they were talking to people who were committed socialists anyway, you know. We were all socialists, I guess, at that time, so it was not unremarkable. Where I think there were arguments about was that the nature of where one would go to in the years following the war, the sort of political and economic type of problems that would ensue. I think everyone was agreed about what had gone wrong before the war and all this sort of thing. There were some divergences of view about the correct methods to adopt in the political and economic problems of the future. But they did supply a lot of the background material that we used. But
Have they supplied the library?
I think that was more critical. The library was just books that had been collected. The library was for ordinary fictional reading. It was primarily nearly all fiction. Those people in the barracks, if they wanted to come for a book to read, could borrow a book from the library sort of thing. We were, you know, operating a public library system. It was all fiction. It was about a few thousand volumes, I think. Quite a lot of them are paperbacks. But the glory of the situation was, as I say, that we were separate. We were on our own. And we were not in any way a military establishment. We were pretty near a civilian establishment, except we wore military clothes. And they hardly ever bothered us.
Who actually ran you, in a sense, then?
We had a senior sergeant who sort of acted, I think, as our leader. He eventually was demobbed.
And who did he report to?
I'm not absolutely certain whether or not we had an education officer. I think perhaps we did. But we never actually saw much of them. It might have been the adjutant, I don't know.
Of the Durhams?
Of the Durhams. Of this 1st Battalion. Up in... they were up the road in this barracks, which was about 10 minutes, a quarter of an hour away. We used to go to the sergeant's mess, because we were sergeants by that time, for our meals. And that meant a walk, more or less, up to the barracks. And this is where we sort of got across purposes with the rest of them, because a lot of those were old, regular peacetime sergeants and sergeants. As I say, most of them had come back from somewhere. And they were staying. Few of them were those sergeants who were going, but quite a lot of the old wartime sergeants had been demobbed by that time. As I say, we were getting back more or less to a regular NCO cadre by that time. And these were all primarily old pre-war NCOs. And in my view, a lot of them were not particularly bright.
Or was it their education, or was it just their mental capabilities?
Well, both, I guess. They were hard drinkers. I mean, we could drink, but they used to get themselves paralytic.
In the mess?
In the mess, yes. And we'll come to that later. We didn't go and drink in the mess, as a rule, because we couldn't stand that. We didn't have to go to the mess to drink. We could go into town, and we used to have a cafe in town, and we drank down there, you know. We didn't have to go and drink. They had to stick together as a group. That was part of it, I think. They didn't used to go into the local population areas, as a rule. That was the way they operated. They tended just to congregate with themselves, fight old battles and get themselves really paralytic drunk. Break things up.
They'd fight?
Yeah.
Would they fight amongst themselves?
Amongst themselves, primarily, when they got...
Was there direct friction between the two groups? I mean, did you just ignore each other, or was it...
There was friction, because we were always complaining about that sergeant's mess committees and things. And what was significant was that the sergeant's mess had a caterer who ran the place administratively and was in charge of the catering of the sergeant's mess. And the not very clever thing that they did was they used to appoint someone to the sergeant's mess catering job who was shortly to be retired, demobbed. For the last 6 months he went to the sergeant's mess, which was a good idea from, you know, the point of whatever he was doing before that. But it wasn't a very clever idea as far as the mess was concerned, because they used to go in there and they used to screw the mess and make as much money as they could for when they left. And they all left with small fortunes.
How did you know that?
Well, I'll come to that. the result as far as we were concerned was, when we were all bright lads, I mean, you know, we're all educated, those people in the sergeant's mess. In the education office, we're all fairly reasonably bright people. And we knew the sort of food that we ought to be getting, and the food actually was diabolical. And we complained about it bitterly whenever they had meetings, you know. And we used to be complaining. They used to sort of then take an opposing view against us because we were sort of rather jumped up types. We weren't proper sergeants for a start with, you know. I mean, we were only sort of acting people and we were conscripts. And we were in the education department, so we were totally beneath the pale as far as the ordinary caliber of regular sergeants were concerned. Anyhow, I'll come to the sergeant's mess a bit later on, because it comes out somewhat later.
Okay.
More important. In the beginning, as far as the education department was concerned, we began, as I say, with educational courses for more or less a rehabilitation role. And we all did lectures in subjects that we thought might be useful to them.
Well, did people come voluntarily to these lectures, or were they sent to them? And did
they were sent to them.
Did they appreciate them?
Well, story. I used to do bookkeeping, and I used to do sort of current affairs as well, but I used to do bookkeeping as my prime course. And I used to take a very elementary bookkeeping course, just on the basis, I mean, it wasn't terribly clever, it was just on the basis that if you ever, when you were demobbed, were likely to be doing your own business and doing your own thing, this is the sort of accounting that you might have to sort of take note of. Most of them are never going to be into their own businesses, but those that you could volunteer for what you wanted to do. And I used to have a group that came along. We did very elementary bookkeeping, and I did one or two people I remember, and some of them appeared very interested and said how pleased they were with the nature of the course I'd given them and the talks I'd given them. And I remember many years afterwards, I was walking over the Tyne Bridge at Newcastle. This was after I'd been demobbed. And a bloke came towards me, and he had a familiar look about him, but I couldn't place him at all. "Is that all there, Sergeant?" he said. He said, "Remember me?" I said, "Oh, yeah, yeah." And it turned out that he'd been on this course, a bookkeeping course. And he said, those courses were great, you know," he says, "that you did, and he said, bloody good," he said. "Useful the way, you know, very useful." So I said, "Oh," I said, "you got a job then?" I said, "Yeah. You're finding them useful, you can do something with them." He says, "Oh," he says, "in a small business," he said. "Just a small business making windows or something for housing, a housing boom one, making windows or whatever." So I said, "Well," I said, "you're doing well then." I said, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm a labourer." So I said, "Well, how was that course then useful to you?" He says, "Oh, I know how they run the business now, though," he says. He says, I know what they ought to be too, but I'm good. Anyway, after a while, and I don't know how long this lasted, perhaps some months, the whole thing changed then. Perhaps the numbers were declining, or perhaps the army lost interest in that aspect of education, and they realised they had a bigger problem, that most of the intake that were coming in, the conscripts, weren't terribly well educated because of the problems during the war, and some of them could hardly read or write or whatever. And it was generally felt that there ought to be an educational system for them. So we went on a retraining course ourselves to this rest camp near Salonika, and we had a good week there. And we were more or less given then what was a basic system of education covering the main subject of an educational course with a view to really re-educating people in a general way. But it was, again, more or less, I think, suggested by APCA, their type of thinking. And we all tended to specialise on certain types of subjects, I guess.
Is this a return to the first, second and third class certificate they'd had before the war? They used to do education with before.
No, I think myself, of course, it was rather too higher involved in higher educational considerations than was necessary at the time. The real problem, I think, with the youngsters coming in was that, as I say, they had basic